What's up, sinners and choosers? Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. If you haven't heard the show before, if you've heard the show before, you've heard this spiel a lot, but this is the show where me and a guest, usually an LA comedian, but not always, this is the show where we, you might guess it, we talk about religion. We talk about whatever we grew up with, what were various turning points for us on whatever our weird paths are and that got us to where we are now. What do we believe? Etc., etc., etc. And usually I have a bunch of these backlogged, but this one was so awesome and so relevant to Easter, and we're so fresh off of Easter that I wanted to go ahead and push it out. Today's episode is with Dana Bowers, who is on the UCB musical mess hall team called Bevel, and is on some other teams out here in Los Angeles too as an improviser and comedian. And I met Dana by doing her podcast, Who We Used to Be. I was a guest invited on that, which she co-hosted with Veronica Gruba. And on that podcast, we got into my background, quickly found out that both me and Dana went to UNC, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We're both religious studies majors at almost the exact same time. And that remains this huge turning point in both of our lives, especially with some of the professors we had there. So if you want to listen to our dual podcast in order, my episode just came out on theirs this week. Again, that's called Who We Used to Be. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. Really, you should hit pause on this and listen to that one first. But if you don't, you should just go back and find that one. Who We Used to Be. It's a great episode. So, and this was a real blast too. And I hope you guys could keep up. I felt like I was talking to somebody who could finally speak a lot of the same language as me. And so maybe I didn't explain things as much, but I thought it was a great conversation. And I really appreciate Dana coming on. Follow her on Instagram at Dana B. And other than that, if you like this show, you can go to chooseyourownreligion.com. I have a blog there where I'm visiting a new church every week and blogging about it, and you can find old episodes there too. Also, if you're in Baltimore or in the DC area, coming May 11th, I'm going to be at the Charm City Comedy Festival in Baltimore. I'm so excited. It's the first comedy festival I've done. I'm stoked. My sister's going to be out there. We're going to have a great time. We're going to probably party a decent amount at that, and I would love to see any of you guys out there if you're in the Baltimore area. Again, that's the Charm City Comedy Festival. You can find more information on Facebook. I'll be there on Thursday, May 11th at 8:30, and I would love to see any of you there. Anyway, that's all the news. That's all the what's happening. I love you guys very much. Please welcome Dana Bowers.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
I'll just get right into it.
Get into
let's do it. I think we missed the part on the recording where we just sang he is alive. Well, you know, the important part of he is alive.
Yeah.
Just the. Yeah. Oh, it's so great.
Oh yeah, it's so good. We're the same.
It's weird when something that like touches that deep back in your subconscious. I haven't accessed that memory, that rhythm. Probably like 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
It's been so long.
Oh, yeah. But when you were a year two camper and like mm-hmm. you saw the first year campers being like, what's this song? And you were like, oh, just wait for the clapping. And then once you learn it, then you're in the club.
Oh, hell yeah. Wait, did you, we're recording this on Easter. Did you go to
Easter? Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Did you go to church today?
I did not go to church today. Mm. I went to the park.
The park.
Yes.
The Griffith Park.
I went to the Griffith Park.
Yes.
And a bunch of North Carolina people got together and just did kind of like a little potlucky thing. Because I remember doing church on Sunday for sure. But I remember I went to visit both sets of grandparents mm-hmm. every Sunday after church of my life. Like,
whoa. Wait, every Sunday?
Yeah. Because we all lived within like a 10-minute radius of really? Each other. Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, Mama and Papa is who we would eat lunch with, and then we would go over to Grandma and Papa's.
Wait, where in North Carolina is this?
This is in the middle. This is in High Point.
Right. Mm-hmm. The Triad.
Yes. In the Triad. So, so yeah, but it was like, so I saw them every week, but on Easter, all the cousins would come in. So it was like, that was a big family thing.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So Easter to me says like, get the family together. So all the North Carina family yeah. people were like getting together.
Totally. Yeah. Easter Sunday, we always had, it was our church, like our closest church friends. So like all like the big hitters, like, you know, the Abernathys, the Yowzies, you know, we would have like 40 some people at our Easter lunches. So I definitely remember like the meal thing being a big part of Easter specifically.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Wait, do you feel guilty though about not going to church? I actually did go to church today.
You did?
So where I'm feeling very high and mighty.
Do you want to say where you go to church? I don't know.
Oh yeah. Well, no, here's the thing. So this year, as part of and related to the podcast, I've been going to a different church every week and then blogging about it. But like, I'm kind of like skeptical about a lot of them, or like I'm going to like some.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to some that are like literally called the Pillar of Fire, you know, just to get you an idea.
Dude, okay. We haven't even like we just met because we got like stoked because we both went to UNC. And yeah. We were both religious studies majors.
Yeah.
I try to explain this to people that a lot of times I go to churches because our religious studies major asked of us as a requirement to go to different religious services.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to like Hasidic Jewish service, you know, it was I went to all different types of things just for the experience. And I would go to like really evangelical or charismatic like services just to like see what was up.
Yeah, that's exactly. I'm tapping
so
right back into that.
I still like doing that. Yeah, it's like a hobby.
Yeah. So, but today there is one that I have enjoyed that I only learned about. So it was before I was doing all this shit. I hadn't been to church probably in like 7 or 8 years mm-hmm. outside of when I was at home.
Mm-hmm.
But I met this guy named Ed Bacon in the LA Fitness gym. He was just like in the locker room. We just had a random. It's one of those things where you just see somebody like, "Hey, how's it going?" Found out he was the pastor at All Saints Episcopal Church
in
Pasadena.
Yeah. Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
Okay, go to the early service and then go to the lecture in between. If there's like a 10 a.m. lecture.
Yeah, the rector's
forum. That's the best.
Yeah.
I stumbled into a lecture with Richard Rohr.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, he pops
you
in
went
every
to that
once
one.
In a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
He like just like drops in.
Yeah, I definitely need to go to one of those. I still haven't been. I've seen some of them streamed online, but I haven't actually been in person to the forum thing. But they have like great shit. Great shit.
Yeah. And it's really, and then like between the services, they have tents set out in the little, like field area, like their little grassy area. And they'll have things that are happening politically. Like if you want to do something, you can sign this petition and like, this is what we're supporting. It's like, it is the community. It is if the church were Christian. Do you know that book?
If the church were Christian?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't.
That's a book rec. If the church were Christian by Philip Gully. It is so good.
Oh, hell yeah.
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 Yeah,
but I met Ed and it just randomly. Then I had him. I went to All Saints. I was like, oh shit! I found out, like, you know, he wrote a book, and then he was like on Oprah for you know as one of her soul teachers. Like I was like, oh my god, this is like a mega dude. It's like a big
Jane Goodall
dude.
Came and spoke one time, like the woman who worked with Apes. Like it's cool.
Yeah, he's not there anymore. He retired like last year, but it still feels like a little bit the closest thing I currently have to a home church, just because I know. At least politically, we're going to be kind of on the same page.
Okay, so that's in Pasadena.
Yeah.
If you go in the opposite direction, just as far, to Brentwood, Barry Taylor has a Sunday service.
I've heard of that one. I need to go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
I go anytime that I can. It's so good. They like open with like Van Morrison songs and like Patti Smith songs. And then he just like talks philosophy, and then theologians like Pete Rollins and stuff like that come in and like
that's so cool.
They just like talk, and then they've got like cool rituals, but like, and they talk about Christianity. It's like the church I want. And it's also in a really cool building that has like an organ, and it's just like the atmosphere is on point. It's great.
Oh my god. I'm going to message you when I go.
Yes.
For people who don't know, he's the AC/DC former. He used to be like an AC/DC roadie, right? That's
right.
Like his
deal.
Right.
Yeah.
And then now I heard him on a podcast.
I didn't even know that about him. I know that he plays music. He's like up there playing music, but I'm sure that that's true about him. Yeah. He seems like an old rock star.
Yeah. But wait, when's the last time? You do go to that church. That's the church, if you do go to one,
That's the one I've been going to right now. Like, that's when, because Sundays I keep as a Sabbath, or I try to.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, and the rule is don't make any plans. Like, I can still do things. I can still like meet up with people and stuff like that. But, I like today, since it's Easter, like plans are just happening, you know, it's like, so it's like, yeah, let's do this podcast. But most of the time Sundays I keep as like, because my brain needs that if I don't want to do anything, then I don't have to.
I love that. I've thought about doing something similar. I remember, like, because this is totally a religious studies thing. Okay, so I don't personally believe that, like, in the Jewish version of, like, how the world is, their literal version of, like, how the world is made with, like, a God. Like, you know, I don't believe in that kind of model of the world.
Like, creationist
stuff? So I don't believe, so, like, when people hear things like, honor the Sabbath, that's like, well, I don't believe in that model of the world, so why do that? But then from, like, a sort of sociological standpoint, if you were like, okay, I feel like they realized that one day off a week is an optimal human thing, and like, who cares? Like, they just needed to put it on like the God reason for like to get people on board to do it.
Well, take a day of rest. It's a holy reason,
right?
You know, it's like really important for your whole health,
right? But like, if you don't believe in the holy aspect of it, I think mm-hmm. it's just even a great. It is like, we don't need to reinvent the wheel of like thinking that we don't need a day off like ever.
But I mean, I'm talking about holy, even as like, even if you're talking scientifically about like energy and
like holistic,
holistic, or like your energy like renewed, like almost no matter how you look at it, if you try to look at it in a plain way, like taking a day of rest to recharge and re-energize is a magical thing.
Yeah. It's all about, it's like cycles and shit. It's cycles and shit.
Yeah. It is.
I mean, it is. I say that like I'm, you know, like a dumb hippie, but like it is.
No, you're on a rock that's a part of a cycle.
Yeah, like everything
your life
is a cycle.
Is dictated by cycles. Yeah.
Wait, are you an Alan Watts person?
I love Alan Watts.
Yeah, that's another thing. He talks about like what everything is a wave. Like literally everything in the world is a wave.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I know.
I'm still kind of like, it's crazy. Ever since we met, it was just like, oh, we do have the same vocab.
I think that we did so much similar shit. I feel like our like building blocks are very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wait, let's back up with you then. So you grew up a Christian, for sure.
For sure.
Wait, which brand were you?
Okay, so if I could, the way that I would summarize it is that definitely born into like a very culturally Christian world. So just like.
Right. Definitely. That's small town North Carolina.
Right. My whole family, everything about just casual interactions it's like covered in Christian culture. Mm-hmm, and the church that we went to was moderate to conservative Methodist church.
Okay. Yep.
And then I started doing because that youth group actually got really evangelical, and it made me I think Pete Holmes says this, where he was like, as soon as they were like, you have to evangelize like heaven or hell, it was like, why aren't we all talking about this all the time?
right.
That's exactly how I felt, is that I took it so seriously, and I was like, this is the most, this is so important. So I started to like church hop to like the most important church, but then like to figure out what I wanted to be the most serious. But then the summer camp I went to was Quaker Lake Camp.
Oh, cool.
Really great. And through that, I got into Quaker stuff. And by high school, I was the presiding clerk of all Quaker youth in North Carolina.
Whoa, check you out. And that's awesome.
Wait, what does
the Quaker clerk, what do they do?
I mean, it's pretty easy. but it was cool because I was voted into that position. Like people had to like vote. So it definitely felt like, we accept you, we like you, and we want for you to be the voice of our group. And basically what you do is Quakers call their services meetings.
You're right.
And then so there are open worship meetings and stuff like that, where it's more like a Sunday service. And then there are also quarterly meetings and yearly meetings, and they really handle the business of a church. And they like Quakers are cool. Like, they like know that the church is a business and they don't right. lie about that. And they like coordinate it as such and like try to make it a really great community and have, and they don't vote on things. That's the other cool thing, is that they don't vote. They come to a consensus.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's like when you're having an issue in a meeting, it's not like, all right, let's vote. And the majority wins. It's like you talk until you come to a consensus, which
that's so
just
cool.
feels really good.
Have you been? I've been to the Pasadena Friends meeting a couple of times.
I actually haven't been to a meeting out here.
Really? Mm-hmm. There's one on Orange Grove that's it's small, but I don't know how big they usually are. But it's like maybe 30, 40 people.
A lot
or so.
Of times that's about it.
Yeah. But that's all I really want or need. I don't need like 200 people all sitting in silence.
No.
You know?
I mean, it's cool when that happens, but yeah, you only need a. Oh, where two or more gathered. Yeah, just a few.
So, yeah, and did your theology then change when you were like got more into the Quaker life? Because I know Quaker, from what I understand of Quakers.
Oh, sorry, just to finish the clerk thing was just that at like quarterly meetings and yearly meetings, I would get in front of people and read the minutes, because there would be minutes like when we would have planning meetings for the different events. Mm-hmm. We would take notes. And then the clerk like would report how we had grown in numbers. It was like this cute little business position where I got to like speak and like have a little gavel, and like it was cute.
Was it a miniature gavel? Like
yeah.
a literal minute.
Yeah. And I had an assistant clerk and we had a secretary, and it was cute.
Oh, that was cute.
It was like student council, but for like Quakers.
Is the rest of your family involved or any of that?
No, I mean, they liked the camp that I went to. Like, they thought it was like chill and pretty and close enough to home that they liked it, that,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it was like a camp that had only like 100 campers at a time. And I worked there for several summers, mm-hmm. and I loved, you know, both sides of it.
Yeah.
Very special place to me. But yeah, I think what's interesting is that I was a part of Quaker stuff while it was going through a transformation, because people in the yearly meeting, there were people with Baptist and evangelical backgrounds who started doing administrative work. They were working in the office mm-hmm. doing just administrative work. And then they started to become in charge of the curriculum and things like that. Like, that became a part of their job. And then more evangelical stuff started to leak into Quaker land.
Yeah.
So by the end of my time as a counselor, my faith had changed a lot. I felt very different about this stuff. I had gone through the religious studies thing. We'd taken Bart Ehrman's class, done the debate, you know, everything.
Yeah.
So, I felt different by my last year, but there was, you know, there was discussion about like, we should have a cross and have the kids like nail their sins to it and all this stuff. And it was just like, oh, this is so not Quaker. It's like, it hurts.
That's
so
painfully
much.
Not Quaker. Yeah.
So I found myself like in that environment, like being a reverse evangelical, where I was the moderate voice. I was because in Quaker services, there's, a time of open worship.
Right.
So it's usually, you like greet everyone, and then there's some sort of stimulus. Like, there's like, maybe someone has something prepared. Like, someone, usually there's not, it depends on which service you go to. There are Quaker meetings that have a minister, like a church that you would think of. And then there are meetings where no one's the minister. It's just a self-governing everyone.
That's the Orange Grove one. It's no minister, nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the belief is that everyone has inner light. And so anyone can be a minister to anyone else's condition. So, that's why equality is important. That's why they were a part of the Underground Railroad and women's suffrage and all this stuff, is cause they like knew, they were like on that tip. They were like, everyone is equal.
Yeah.
So Quakers are cool.
They really are ahead of the curve in that kind of thing. And that pure, the inner light, I think of it as like energy or whatever, like the idea that our consciousnesses are all basically the same, right? All sentient beings are totally, should be held equally. It's crazy how that was groundbreaking for such a long time in most of history.
Yeah.
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 Wait, I have a question too about like, so was yours, your Quaker meeting that you would go to, would it have a minister?
Yes.
Okay.
So, the reason why I went to the church that I went to is because it had a sick youth group.
Really?
Yeah. So the camp I went to, it's like I met my like high school boyfriend there, and his uncle was the coolest youth pastor in all of the yearly meeting, and he planned all of the cool big yearly Quaker events, and he was just a 30-minute drive from my house, and I loved doing that. I got to call my boyfriend on the drive to and from youth group, and then like go. So I like mostly went to that church for the youth group because it was so sick. Tim, the best youth pastor ever, really committed, just really did really fun, cool stuff. And then, but it was a more organized church. But then there were other, I would like to go and visit like other meetings where they were, there might be one person that had like some type of designated administrative role.
Sure.
But like definitely made sure that they were like, I am not an authority.
Yeah.
I'm just here to help organize. Yeah. But like it was mostly just like run by that community.
Even when there is a minister, is it still like open forum time and stuff? Or
so if there's a minister, it would be like a regular church service where there's like some songs and like a sermon and stuff. And then somewhere in there, there's like a time of reflection.
Gotcha.
And called open worship, where a lot of times it'll just be a few minutes of silence.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move on to the next part of like another like meaty part of the sermon or whatever. And then it'll end with another thing, another 3 minutes of silence.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's open worship because if you feel led to share something. So sometimes people would just like start singing. They just like wanted to sing a song and then you would like join in.
Mm-hmm.
Or people would say like, hey, this thing happened to me this week. It really sucked. I could use
doing a bit. He's like doing open mic material. Yeah.
No, like saying like I could use some like, good vibes sent my way.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Sorry.
I was doing a bit just there.
I'm taking this very seriously. I'm like reflecting on my religious times.
Yeah, it's great.
And then sometimes people would have like poetry or something that they had read that week or an article they had read or like just a thought that had crossed their mind that they felt compelled to share, because that is a forum. That is the way that you can be a minister to someone else, because you then can share something, because then someone would share. And then in that culture, usually you take a beat, like it's not like someone stands up and talks and then another person's like, hey, yeah, me too. It's like somebody shares and then it's like a few moments of silence. And then if that really resonated with you, if that was something that you needed to hear, then the phrase that was in that culture was, friend, you speak to my condition.
Ooh, friend, you speak to my condition.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's like, I second that emotion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And like, I needed to hear that. Like, amen. You know? Like, thanks. Like, what? That's what's up. Yeah.
That's so cool. The only ones I've ever been to is just like, it's like an hour of that. It's like usually like a half hour, nobody says anything.
Yes.
It's kind of like an unspoken rule where it's like, just don't say anything in the first, like, give everybody a good 20, 30 minutes of silence before we start talking. But then once people start talking, it's a lot of that. I didn't hear that that specific amen though.
Yeah.
But I really like it. I think so far, but besides All Saints, the Quakers are the one that I would most consider like actually going to on like a regular basis.
Totally. Yeah. I would seek out a Quaker meeting. I find it important to have that day of rest. And sometimes it's just like trying to coordinate, it feels like, am I like going to get like look up on Yelp?
Yeah. So that was all in high school. And so by the time you get to college, you're not super evangelical per se.
No, I'm not evangelical, but I would say that I am very involved with God. Like God was really important to me and youth group was really important to me. Those were all of my friends. And that was my favorite subject to talk about, was like divinity.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think that I was hyped up about that stuff, and the culture of it just fit for me. Like I really liked the singing aspect of it.
Sure. Yeah.
And having the ability to perform in a lot of ways was really nice. I joined a Christian fellowship as soon as I got to college. And
You said it wasn't
it wasn't Campus Crusade. Right. It was InterVarsity,
the other pretty big one.
Yeah, so Campus Crusade was enormous. and InterVarsity was really quite large.
Yeah. I mean, I would see your signs like all over campus.
Yeah. There was a thing for sure. There were hundreds of people in that Christian fellowship, and it felt like youth group summer camp. Like it made it made the whole college experience feel like summer camp. Did you do? Yes, you did. You did like not Wesleyan, but something.
No, I did Presbyterian campus ministry. Yeah, because that's what my dad is, a Presbyterian minister. Grew up super Presbyterian, and then my first week I met somebody from that group that ended up being my freshman year girlfriend, just like all freshman year.
Nice.
It's great. Yep. Yeah. And so we were super involved with PCM that freshman year.
That's so nice. And what a nice way to start college.
It was. You know what? And I really love that group. I'm still good friends with a lot of those people. And it was like a nice size, like maybe 40 total people or so across four classes. So it's like you had like big enough to have some interesting stuff and have some fun activities, but also like not so big that you didn't know it. Like you knew everybody.
Totally.
It's really nice. Yeah.
Totally.
But then when I started taking, I knew some other people had taken Ehrman's class from PCM too.
Yeah.
But like Old and New Testament. But somewhere around my junior year, when I remember, because Bart Ehrman, I feel a little weird because we already had a little bit of a catch up conversation on Bart.
Oh, I'll talk about this all over again. Yeah, and just again and again.
Let's catch people up real quick. So okay. Bart Ehrman,
go.
Well, yeah. I liked your version that you had on your podcast.
Okay.
The way you described him.
Okay, so the way I understand Bart Ehrman is that he was a very Christian person who really loved God and who wanted to go into the scholarly community and be an evangelical among scholars.
Mm-hmm.
And he really didn't, he was like, he had what he would describe as like such a fire for God that he was like confused. He was like, the people that are closest to God's word, how are they falling out of love with God? Like,
yeah.
How, like, I just got to go and remind them how great God's word is.
Right.
And then when the thing that broke him, the way that he described it, was that he couldn't reconcile the issue of human suffering.
Yeah.
That if God is all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-loving, he actually can't be all three of those things if you consider human suffering.
Right. Classic problem of evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then somewhere along the way, he became somewhat, like, I guess by North Carolina standards, like, oh, he's this, like, big atheist professor. You know, he's going to convert, like, going to change so many of your
man. He would have been referred to as a flaming liberal.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Even though I don't even know if he really is. He doesn't really bring up politics that much. But like
InterVarsity would offer, they would call it a course. They would say, like, we're having a small group course for people who are going to be taking Bart Ehrman's class, and they can have this as like a side by side.
It's like damage control.
Yeah.
prevent the
okay.
Fallout.
What did he tell you? All right. Let's like any knots that got loosened, let's tie those back up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what was cool is that he, I remember he would say too, he's like, you know, I feel like there was one in both semesters, there was one course where he sort of had a big Q&A kind of session where he was like,
mm-hmm.
or he kind of like laid out his whole philosophy and his whole background. And I remember him saying, like, I'm not saying that it makes you dumber or smarter to be a Christian or not. My wife is Episcopalian.
Right. Yeah.
Which
right.
makes even more sense now
so
that I know
vulnerable.
What.
Yeah. He was like, he got so personal, and everyone in there was so hungry for his personal story.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I think even back, I want to say nowadays, I feel like more people, thanks to the internet, there's more people that are vulnerable, like online, honest about who they are. In general, than there were, whatever, like eight some years ago, whenever we were taking Ehrman. And so I think that was part of it, too. Like, it just any kind of, like, I mean, I think we're just naturally drawn to truth, like, as humans. There's something, and that's what, there's these little cracks, Dana, in, like, my agnosticism or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even, you know, whatever my weird mix of beliefs are, but things like, why are humans drawn almost intrinsically to truth? Like, what is that? What kind of extra? Doesn't seem to be anything about the physical world that would imply that. And maybe there is just a purely biological, like, evolutionary reason for that too. But I don't know. There's something about like higher truths that I think the religions kind of can get at when they're at their best.
Do you, I would not have an example off the top of my head. Do you have an example off the top of your head of something that feels like a sweeping higher truth that most people connect with?
Love.
What about love?
Love that transcends circumstances, unconditional love as a...
Like the love that, like the feeling that love gives
you?
Not
the feeling, but the, well, not necessarily the feeling, but the belief in the act, the belief in the process of love, of like, I'm going to choose to act out of love. I recognize I might feel, my emotions might carry me various ways, but because... this is what, you know, God tells us, or this is what whoever. I believe in the supremacy of love as always the best course of action. And I think that really resonates up with people whether they, who are completely not into God or anything like that. I don't know. That's,
I think most people would agree with that for sure.
Yeah, that's always the one that I go back to.
Like,
yeah. You don't have any examples off the top of your head, or you don't even know if you agree with me.
Well, I just don't know if any truth... is truth to everyone.
I should say, I agree. But I'm just gonna, in this truth in the sense of like, when you feel somebody being honest, you just, there's something that's very resonant about that. Even if it's not like an ultimate truth or whatever, but there's something that, at least when I see somebody being honest, like on stage is the most common example. When you hear a comic being like totally 100% themselves, it's like it can't help but resonate with me.
Right. When, like when they're speaking their truth.
Exactly.
When they're being true.
Exactly. And I often disagree. You know, if I like looked back and analyzed their opinions of it, it's not that I'm agreeing with their opinions, but it's that honesty and their truth. But also the things that are like the, I don't know.
Is that because they're loving themselves and allowing themselves to be themselves through being their truth? Is that why it's beautiful, do you think, maybe?
I think so, yeah. I think... getting to that level is like a process of loving yourself more and more unconditionally, I think.
Yeah, enough to keep all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what resonated with Bart Ehrman.
Yeah.
Was his comfortability just being like, this is who the fuck I am. And this is the evidence. This is like what we, this is what we, our best educated guess about like what really happened, what was really written, etc.
Yeah, like actually loving people the best that you can.
Yeah.
Actually loving the best that you can. Actually, you know, instead of what you think you should or are supposed to do or what would make sense if you didn't think about that too hard.
Right. Or what would help your career or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All the, you know, all the shit that the ego draws in. Did you ever get into any like Eastern stuff?
What do you mean?
Like Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, anything like that?
I mean, yeah, like I like read about that stuff right now. Like I love like Ram Dass and like
And Alan Watts. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah, and Alan Watts and like I like meditate and shit. It's great.
I think you're the first, you might be the first person I've met like organically that also knows who Ram Dass is.
Really?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like, it's one of those things that once you know something that's so great, you just think that everyone does because everyone should.
Yeah.
Because he's just great because he is one of those people. Because when you said that everyone loves truth, I couldn't think of any exact phrase, but I did, like, Ram Dass popped into my head because listening to his lectures.
Yes.
It often doesn't feel like I'm learning something new. It feels like I'm being reminded of something.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree.
You
and
know?
I listened to his, I started off listening to a lot of Alan Watts, and I still like Alan Watts. I don't listen to him as much anymore, but Ram Dass, there's something so like sticky about like those old 70s and 80s lectures, especially. You know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's so great.
I agree that he's somebody that's like, to me, it feels like it's just, it is dispensing truth. And maybe there's something going on there that's a pure like performance element that's like making, like, you know, the way he's like, he speaks and then like lets lots of silence sort of pass. I'm sure there's like, I know there's got to be some things that are just working on my like brain to make me more receptive to it.
I mean, again, it's just like him just saying how it actually is. Like, yeah, he's just, instead of what it's supposed to be, because I think us as religious people, and let's not forget Southern people, that it is, there is so much dancing that we do, and there is a way to look at it where it is beautiful, and there is, it's like there's a beautiful part of the culture that's all sweet tea and whatever. I love North Carolina, but there is a large part of that culture that is about pretending that things are better than they are, or saying that something is good when it's not. And so it's like, and like everyone's doing this dance to like try and show that they've got the thing or whatever. And then it's like, but you aren't actually happy, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not actually how it works, dude.
You could not. I feel like you're honestly, it just resonates so hard. I mean, my family is sort of the best example of that, where I have issues having very honest conversations with my family. Just, you know, they tend to be more of the small talk variety, the more of the like kind of surface level, because it's not about not loving each other. It's just like, that's your average stranger to stranger or acquaintance to acquaintance interaction is very like surface level.
I call it vanilla.
Very vanilla.
It's
just
like, it's, if it's not sweet, if it's not nice, if it's not vanilla, then sweep it under the rug. We don't need to talk about it.
I know. Oh, my sweet mother. I mean, everything that she's like, everything would be special to her. Like, oh, it's such a special moment. That's such a special. I'm like, oh, if it's all special, then none of it's special. But anyway,
I mean, it was like even just simple stuff with our family. Like if we had a tough moment and like I wanted to talk about it and just be like, this is like a recurring issue. Like, can we talk about this? Like, this is weird, right? It was very like the second that I would bring that up, my parents would nip it in the bud by saying like, let's not argue.
Yeah.
So we never talked about it. It was just like, how unpleasant to argue.
You're right.
Let's not argue.
Holy shit.
So it was definitely like, I've had a lot. Thank God for comedy.
Yeah.
I swept a lot under the rug. I got a lot of fairy dust under there to share with everybody. You know what I'm saying?
I'm 100% the same way. I mean, like we had so much in the name of, it was in the name of love and not in avoiding arguments.
In the name.
But it was, there was so much passive aggression going on because of that. Because when you're like, when your doctrine is to not disagree, or else it's like a bad sign of things, then it's,
amen. I remember sitting in youth group and having one kid that was smart and just like, sorry, what you just said didn't make any sense, ma'am. And I remember like thinking like, shut up, dude. No, this needs to make sense.
Yeah.
You know, like this is uncomfortable. Like I remember thinking like, we all want to agree. Okay. So like, if we can all agree, no, shut up, dude. Like, I remember feeling that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Here's my, And quasi defensive of that, I don't like the other side of the completely opposite end of the spectrum from that attitude, which is like being a genuine asshole and accepting being a shitty person, right? Like to the point where you're like enabling your own shitty behavior.
Sure.
Because
do you know what you are on the Enneagram, PS?
I don't.
Okay, never mind.
Somebody sent me that the other day, but I didn't actually.
It's very important. We'll talk about it later. Sorry.
I like the middle ground. I love people admitting how they've been an asshole, how they've been so, how they've fucked up. Mm-hmm. I mean, as people in comedy, we naturally are around that kind of thing all the time. And it's more truth telling. Maybe it's your personal little T truth, but it's that there's something about that is so delightful. But then you also see, especially in open mics, people just basically being like, yep, I'm a fucking shitty, but it's not even in a pleasant way. It's not in like, hey, I love myself despite me having flaws. It's like, yeah, you're all shitty too, and everybody's really secretly shitty. I don't like that either.
No, I work in restaurants, and someone recently was like, talked about a specific race of people and about how they don't tip. And I was like, no, don't, not fair. There's all kinds of white trash that comes in here that don't tip. Mm-hmm. Like, there is every kind of shitty person. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to let you be racist. I know that there's like a secret code where servers are allowed to be racist or something.
Right.
But no, everyone, like every single kind of person has their very shitty people.
definitely. When, and moreover, we're all shitty at some points, and I love admitting that, but I also, I don't know, I'm on the team that was like, let's also try to improve ourselves. Like, let's not settle for, like, let's not say it's better than it is, which is Southern, good old Southern, you know, fake veneer thing, but let's not act like we can't make things better than what it is, or like we can't like improve, or like, you know, I don't, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Take responsibility for your shit. Don't just place it on some God that's going to take responsibility for it and magically woo woo make it happen. And you're not going to do it. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Take responsibility for your shit.
What did I just awaken?
That's the song I'm singing.
Right on.
Yeah.
So when you went through Bart's class, Bart Ehrman's,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and then, what was your senior thesis? What was that on?
I was in Yaakov Ariel's class, and he was a very sweet man. And, I was writing, my first year of college had gone through Paul's letters, and mm-hmm, I had made an effort to prayer journal every day. I think that they're still in North Carolina, and I haven't read through them. And I think at this point, it would be really great to read them. I think I would really enjoy reading them.
Yeah.
To read all my Christianese and the way that I talked to God. But what's cool is that when I've talked to God, I've always effortlessly, like without thinking about it, interchanged like talking to God and then saying you, and knowing that I'm talking about myself and knowing that I'm talking about like God or divinity inside of myself. So it's still pretty sweet to like read back on those journals. But I was reading, I was just such a good little Christian soldier that first year of college. I was like a good student and a good Christian. Like, oh, wow. and I would every night do a devotion and like read a chapter of Paul's letters.
Wow.
And I at that time would like then journal about how, like, this made me uncomfortable. Like, I didn't like this. But then I would like write and try to convince myself into like why it would be good, you know, and like because it's the Bible and it's Paul, and like how like I was like writing about my struggles to accept this text because I didn't like it, but it was like I'm really trying because I know that this is the word of God, so like here we go, like I'm gonna take this medicine, Tinkerbell. and so then for my senior thesis, I had gone through Bart Ehrman's class and just begun to really wake up to this stuff. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to revisit that Paul stuff and see if I'm really ready to see this in a scholarly way. And at that time, I really did think that I would be positive about it. And then it was like really cool. I really like shat on Paul for like 42 pages.
Good. I'm not a fan of Paul.
No, God.
I'm really not. He has some great, God. He goes back and forth. He's like,
he's the biggest con man of all time.
You know what? I think best case, he's like Miles Davis, where he has some moments of genius and pure, like he changed the game. He was very revolutionary. He's like one of the best ever, but Miles Davis is also like a big misogynist and like a big asshole and like abusive to like multiple partners. So let's not say anything Miles does is the word of God. That's all I'm saying with Paul. Paul has some great lines. There's some great poetry in what Paul says in a lot of his letters, but there's also some just very judgmental, very decisive, very like, where is this coming from?
I don't know. I kind of think of him like Shia LaBeouf, where it's like, you can't deny that, like, he's a good actor. Like,
right.
He is.
Right.
Like, Paul's a good poet. He is.
Right.
But, like, that dude is like, I don't want to hang out with him.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, yeah, dude wrote poetry, or, like, he wrote some books of the Bible. Like, that's cool, and there are some lines that are good. But there is so much where it's just like, I fundamentally do not like you.
Right.
Also, like,
right.
and like, Jesus is really cool, really great example of a person, and, like, really great example of love, and just, like, that story, the story of that, I really like, and there's a lot of wisdom there. And then, like, with Paul, I just, like, it's like a needle in a haystack for me.
Yeah. Totally. Well, not, you know, I went to last week for Palm Sunday, the church I went to, and I only went there because they said they had live animals as part of their Palm Sunday, like in a processional. It's like, oh shit, I gotta check them out. They were like this conservative Lutheran church, and it was a closed communion, so like you had to be like, you had to believe in their specific they had like four tenets of like, these are the requirements to do communion.
Do you remember what they were?
I don't.
Did you remember like one?
basically just saying you need to like believe, you need to believe in like the literal resurrection of Jesus, and like you need to believe these certain specific things. You need to commit yourself to Christ. You need to be like blah, 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 that type of thing. And one of the things they cited was this 1 Corinthians, I don't know it off the top of my head. It's like 1 Corinthians 1:29 or something. I don't know. Anyway, there's a, if you Google Corinthians and then like this kind of thing, like the idea that you should only take the Lord's Supper if you like after reflection and after like an inner, basically reflecting what it means. But then in their bulletin, it says like, it cites that as saying, this is the Lord says to do this. I'm like, no, that's Paul saying that. That's just Paul saying that. And now it's so easy to conflate things that Jesus said and things that Paul said, 'cause you're not reading it critically.
No. Yeah, these are just like, letters that some dude wrote to these, like, he was just bossing around some communities.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing is that he's human. I'm sure that he did some good stuff for organizing this and for inspiring people. Like, you know, if we're gonna, I'm trying to look at the whole person. All right, I can see something there.
Yeah.
You know, like, Paul did something. But, I don't know. I think he messed up a lot of it. I think that like Jesus is way more woo-woo than we give credit to. Like,
oh,
I think
absolutely.
That he's just like
absolutely.
Way more mystical. And I think that Paul just like tried to put that butterfly in a jar.
Yeah. Well, that's what Richard Rourke talks about with the cosmic Christ.
Oh,
you know?
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Just the idea that like, you know, Jesus being a historical person, but the Christ, we think that Christ is his last name, but it's really speaking to, you know, being the anointed one, being like the certain thing. But in Richard Rohr talks about like there's a Christ energy that basically the thing that has always existed since the Big Bang, basically the light.
Yeah.
And he is the most clear representation and manifestation of that light that we have.
Yeah.
And then, but that the Christ is in all of us.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah. 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 No, I've heard him talk about that.
And
he's
that,
so sweet.
That shit is so, so up my alley.
Yeah.
So up my alley.
Yeah.
Wait, when you moved, so you moved out to here in LA right after college?
Mm-mm. This is cool. Okay, so I came out here I had to take an extra semester because UNC, God bless it, had everything but good academic advising.
Mm.
So I had even like gone in and told them what I needed to do. And then they told me the opposite. And then they made me go to school longer, whatever. Worked out. Love my life. So I came out to LA and did a summer internship, went back, finished school. And then, then when I moved out here, it was like easier because I'd been out here for summer.
Wait, was that through the comm department?
But yes.
I know a lot of people in that.
Yeah,
the,
me too.
That same internship.
That's who I spent Easter brunch with, was a lot of people who did that internship.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Smallest world. And or maybe we're just the same. So went back to school and I was close with the professor and we wrote I was a script supervisor and I called myself the Christian ambassador because we were writing, it was called Nothing Pink, based on a young adult novel written by a man named Mark Hardy, such a sweet man. And it was about a 14-year-old boy who knew he was gay, whose dad was a pastor in the American South in North Carolina. And like what it was like from his perspective to really not want to be gay. And then for like just like what that experience was. And we loved the book because it didn't villainize the parents or the church. It actually showed like sympathy from their side. And then we performed, it was theatrical, but it used like comm studies elements. So it was a little bit of experimental theater so that you really could hear the story from the kid. And it also didn't make the kid look perfect either. And you saw, you felt sympathy for why the parents were concerned for their kid.
It's like The Wire.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. I have not seen that show.
Oh, really?
I have not. I hear it's very good.
It is very good. But it also has very complex characters who it's not perfectly like clear who's exactly the best. Like there's good people among the bad people and bad people among the good people.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, it was human and it showed the story from all different sides, and it was a musicalized narrative. I loved that. Every time that music was in it, it was appropriate. It was like music on the radio or like the hymns that you were singing in church or whatever. And what was great about that was that it created a dialogue for, because most of the dudes that were in the show with me were gay, and they invited their parents and their family to come see the show.
Wow.
And it actually legitimately changed lives. And like for years, we heard these stories about like, this is something that we've wanted to talk about, and this gave us language. And I was able to say, like, I feel like that mom.
Wow.
That's exactly how I feel. And
holy shit.
Yeah. And it was really, we believed in it so much. And then I moved to New York to workshop it because I was very lucky. Our music producer is a very talented Broadway music producer. I got to like perform on Broadway a couple times, like nice. Out of this loophole. It was like really fun. He wrote our music and we did it a couple times, and you know, out of just like timing and politics and like someone being in North Carolina and us being up there and rights and whatever, it just like, we only got to do it a couple times, and it ended up, I would love to do that show again.
It sounds amazing.
Oh, because the reason why I called myself the Christian ambassador was that the professor was not gay and was not Christian. And so a lot of times there were things in his writing and his adaptation. The writer of the young adult novel was gay and Christian, but the my professor who was adapting it was not. And so he would try to put like jabs into Christians. And I was like, I know these people.
Yeah.
If you say that, if you make that joke, they're not stupid. They will know that that's a jab at them, and their ears will be closed for the rest of the time.
Yep.
And then he wanted to put the show on at a Universalist Unitarian church. And I was like, great. Then you'll be preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
And then everybody that you want to reach is like, from the second that they get into the parking lot of that Unitarian church,
yep.
They're going to be like, okay, this is a separate experience from my life.
Yeah.
And so we had, I really pushed for us to have it on campus, and like, that's why I called myself the Christian ambassador.
Yeah.
But then, so I lived in New York for 3 years and, wanted to be doing that every day, but only did it a handful of times, and mostly just worked in restaurants and had a good time and learned how to play the guitar, and then took a road trip out here and got stuck and decided to stay here. And that was three and a half years ago.
Like literally stuck.
Yeah. The girl that I road tripped with like a week before we left New York. So I had quit my job and I had basically moved out of my apartment. And she was like, when we get to San Francisco, I got to stay there. And I was like, okay, cool. I guess like technically I could like stay in New York and, you know, figure it out. But I think I will just be bitter.
Yeah.
So I think that I should just go on this road trip and like still just take my time and figure it out, because I had like saved up some money. I wanted to move apartments in New York. Moving in New York is hard enough.
Yeah.
That like because I just had an insane landlord, and I was like, I'm ready to be free of this woman.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, so you weren't planning to move out of New York?
No, I wasn't. I was planning to move apartments, and I just kind of wanted to hit the refresh, reset. Like, yeah, I had been working in the same restaurant for a minute.
Totally.
Was like,
need change.
I just want to go on a road trip and visit every friend that's in grad school around the country, and just like all my friends that never get visitors because they live in podunk nowhere, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah.
So, So I dropped her off in San Francisco and then drove down the 101, took like 13 hours and like hit every berry farm that I could and like was on the coast the whole way down, and then came here, couch surfed with a bunch of the North Carolina people, pretended like I wasn't going to move here, got a short term lease, pretended like I wasn't going to move here, took a UCB class, and then I was like, I like it. I live here.
Wow. That's really cool. That's like the coolest moving story I've heard out here.
I love LA. It's great. And then with all these North Carolina people, it felt like family, like home. And then I had been here for a summer. I did that internship. So it was just like, I kind of know what it is. Like,
yeah,
it's been
a
while since I've been here, but like, I've been here before. I kind of did this once, so it's not completely strange.
Yes. That is the biggest part to me to surviving LA, is finding some kind of clan, some kind of tribe, mm-hmm. some kind of small group. You got to have some kind of small group mm-hmm. that you're like, yeah.
That's why I still like going to church and stuff, is that it's like people making an effort to like make community, because it's like the thing that we humans need.
Totally. I mean, even this morning in church, and a lot of the hymns didn't line up. The Episcopalian hymns, apparently they do a lot of different stuff than presbies do.
Yeah.
But they did there was one overlapping one, which is like, this is always like the intro Easter song as the choir marches in.
Yes.
Jesus Christ is risen today. Do you know that one?
Jesus
Christ is risen today. Alleluia. Et cetera, et cetera. That one, I've not really been moved by that song a lot, but today, something about it made me feel like my mom was next to me. Like, I could hear my mom singing that, because that was literally every Easter, and I like started tearing up. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? I'm like tearing up in church.
That's
over
so
like
nice.
Seeing the cross and seeing flowers and shit.
What are you talking about? Don't act like you didn't know that was going to happen.
I didn't know it was going to happen.
You put yourself in a ceremonial situation. A ritual was happening. Please, feelings are coming. That's why we're there. We want the spirit to move. Come on, Joe.
My heart has been so close to that. My mind has been so closed off to that. I was like, what the fuck? And even as it was happening, I'm like, no.
Your mind might be closed off, but your heart still wants it.
And you know what's sad? I talked to my mom earlier today. Did I mention that? No, because it would have been too real, a little bit too uncomfortable. You know what? Like, it's a whole Southern thing where it's like, we talked about pointless, because it's equally my fault too, a lot of times, why we have these.
Oh, so you and your mom didn't talk about you almost tearing up.
Yeah, like today. Like, mm-hmm. literally today. I didn't mm-hmm. talk about that with her, because it's like, we have that muscle memory of not being like getting deep or getting like super real with people, with each other at least.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to warm my parents up and break them in a bit. It's working slowly but surely. A lot of times it's like 10 steps forward, 8 steps back, but yeah.
Yeah. Wait, when you moved out here, this is what I originally was going to ask.
Oh, yeah.
So when you moved to New York, or when you moved out here, I mean, when you moved out here, were you like, whatever you are now, like, would you consider yourself a Christian?
No, I would say I'm culturally Christian,
right.
for sure. But in the way that a person can be like culturally Jewish or something, but I consider myself to be a flaming agnostic.
Yeah.
As in, like I don't know, but I'm like really searching, like always, and like on a cellular level, like I can't even help it. You know, it's just like,
oh, Dana, I know.
I know you know. I know.
Oh,
you know.
I'm for fucking sure.
I'm like a radio that is constantly like, like tuning in to like, where is it? Like, let me find that sweet, sweet song. You know what I mean?
Good God, I know what you mean. We are two radios amplifying each other. We're just like crazy right now. But when did that happen for you though? When did you make that shift from like flaming agnostic to?
That's why we're talking about Bart Ehrman's class,
right?
Man,
but
it was in that. That's when I think that I really allowed myself. I think that we which your episode of my podcast is going to come out this week.
Ooh.
And I talked about this, I think, but Rob Bell had a perfect analogy that went with this that I like read at the same time. He has his first book was Velvet Elvis. And in like the first chapter, there's this beautiful metaphor about like a lot of times your faith can be like a brick wall where each tenant is a brick and you build it up and it can like keep people out and you aren't allowed to change what you believe because if you pull out a brick, then the wall will fall down. But if you have a faith that's like a trampoline and every tenant is like a spring, you don't need all of the springs to jump. You just need some. And then you can think of God as like the big mesh part that you jump on. And like, yeah, you can like lay down and like look up in the stars and like just like be comfortable. And then you have a faith that's inviting and that's fun. And you can change your mind about those springs anytime. But I think that I read that at the same time that I was doing Barterman's class. And so, and then one of my best friends, Katie McNeil, she had done Young Life with me in High Point. She's one of these LA internship people.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And then she had become less and less religious, but she had been a Christian person that I had looked up to at one point. And so then I like came to her during that season of my life and I was just like, I'm really scared, man. Like this is what we've been talking about. We've been talking about this season where you will doubt, where you will want to let go of the brick wall. And right now I have the voice of every single leader in my life right now being like, when you find yourself in that season of your life, you just come right back to church. You know, it's just like, remember who you are. Remember who you are. You know better than that. Just like that voice on repeat in my head. And I went to Katie and I told her and she just said, you're fine. You're fine. If the God that we believe in is real, then he's going to be so stoked that we're thinking about this.
Yeah.
That like, yeah, we're, you know, that like, it's going to be okay that you're using your brain in this way and that you're doing what you're doing. And like, think about how you're wanting to love people better. And like, the God that we got stoked on was a good, like, we believed in a cool God.
Yeah.
Like, it, yeah, we didn't, like, I didn't believe in the mean white man with the lightning bolts in his hand, you
no,
know?
Neither, no.
I sang that song, Awesome God. There is thunder in his footsteps and lightning in his fists.
Our God is an awesome man. Yeah.
Oh, the Lord, he wasn't joking when he kicked him out of Eden. It wasn't for no reason that he shed his blood. His return is very close, and so you better be believing that our God is an awesome God.
What?
But, I loved God and that's what I like. And like Katie saying that was like, if this God is real, like, then it's fine. And that, and so then at the end of college, I started to just let go and be more okay with questioning and reflecting and just like, I think it was important that I still considered God. It felt like the death of a father figure, you know, it like definitely felt that way. Like something changed there and but like whatever God is, like if God is just energy or like divinity, like I still like just like love God.
Yeah. I love that too. I really do. And I love, I guess what I get on, and this is heavily influenced by Ram Dass and that people of that vein, is just completely blowing open my notion of what God is and could be. You know, the things they say to us in church, which is like, God is love or God is everything. What, like, there's, you can't say what isn't God. Like, there's sometimes people talk about that, but then they still find places like, well, that's not God. You're like, no, motherfucker, it's all God. Like, it all is. And it's just the word God has, even still, as I'm saying it now, there's so much cultural memory that makes you think of
the roses, you know, like it's everything.
It absolutely is. And you know, Taoism sort of got me into some of that too, is just accepting all the parts of the cycle. You know, the cycle, what makes the cycle interesting isn't just the high part. It's literally the fact that it goes up and down. Like, that's what makes a wave, or else it would just be a straight line. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Wait, when did you get into Ram Dass?
Is
this recent?
Semi-recent. I think it's in L.A. it started in L.A., yeah. In L.A. development.
Yeah.
I think that I had heard and seen the book Be Here Now. I think I'd seen that in friends' apartments and stuff in New York. But, I can't remember... I remember when Pete Holmes talked about him, I got excited because I was like, I know Ram Dass, but I can't remember where I first heard.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember.
I gave away my last copy of Be Here Now to somebody. I need to get another one.
I sell it at Barnes & Noble.
Do they?
On Amazon.com, yes.
I mean, yeah, Amazon is... What's...
Amazon is...
It's just... Amazon. I got totally lost in my train of thought. I didn't know what I wanted to ask about Ram Dass anymore. I'm just so like, yeah, you know where I'm at.
Yeah, I know.
There was something that I played. I'd had a live Choose Your Own Religion that was like a fucked up worship service. It wasn't like a podcast interview thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I played clips of Ram Dass in between, and people thought,
nice.
But people thought that was me trying to make like this is some great shit, y'all. But then I think some people like thought it was like a joke or satirical,
right.
Like
right.
Somebody, Jake Kroger, he was like, is that a cult leader that you were playing? Is that Jim Jones? Like, no, it was, I don't know if you ever heard this one. It's when, and this again goes to the thing of like, what isn't God? What is it like? Mm-hmm. He's playing this thing. Everywhere you look, you see what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know that one? And everywhere you look, if you're looking for God, all you see is God.
Yeah.
Totally. And then there was...
And if you know what you're looking for, you're more likely to find it. That's not what I find. Like, you'll find what you're looking for. Yeah. If you know what you're looking for.
Fucking A. I mean, okay, we could... I don't know how much time you have. I know it's...
Oh, the thing that I had was canceled, so...
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we're still about that time to make up a religion if you're... You're hip to
Let's
that.
Make up a religion. I haven't thought about it a bunch. I have like...
No, it's okay. You don't need to have thought about it much. my little trusty questionnaire here.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
I'm ready. Wait, first of all, can we... I want to can we pick something? I want to read the songbook you have.
Yes.
You brought this beautiful songbook.
So I stole this songbook from Quaker Lake Camp. This was... when we would have M&M music and meditation in the evenings. This was the book that we sang out of. There were other cool songbooks that we had too, but this one's from like the 70s and it has a bunch of like Carpenters and Bob Dylan and Beatles stuff in there.
I saw the light.
Yeah.
Oh, Will the Circle Be Unbroken? I remember that one. That's
a
great one. Yeah.
It's in there. But then there's a bunch of Christian stuff. And yeah, we were talking about He's Alive. And oh man, there's so much. Yeah,
my dad would play all these types of songs on the guitar like all the time. Anyway,
yeah.
All right, so let's make up Dana's new religion. It doesn't have to be something that you are ahead of or anything.
Okay.
But
this is something I want to participate in.
I mean, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Or do you want for me to make up a joke? I'll make up a joke.
No, no. People have taken this completely flippantly, but maybe a lot of people take it like,
I'll take it seriously.
Let's do it.
Let's take it seriously. Great.
All right. So, in this religion, what kind of God structure would you have? Like, whether it's monotheism, polytheism, with like a Greek sort of thing, like a specialization, or more like Buddhism, where there is no deity really involved at all.
I think that polytheism is more fun. Like, I think it's fun to give divine energy and like specializations to a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go poly on that one.
Okay. So like each thing being like what kinds of things would then be represented?
I've thought about it, and because I don't think I feel comfortable asking people to believe in anything. But I think that there are things that we can like get excited about and that we can like feel that hold power. Mm. So I was thinking about like it would be real because rituals are really fun. So like if there were rituals with like water and fire and earth and wind, you know? But that there would be like different divine things like given like in different specializations to give into, even just like something like those four basic elements
just,
would be fun.
Yeah, just the total nature type. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Who can't get behind nature? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, and again, not to take everything back to that, the same point we've been harping on, but like, but the idea of truth, like there's something about nature that is undisputed truth. Like when you're out in the woods, you're like, no, this is like, nobody's invented, like, this is just how the world literally is with at least... I'm not reading an essay about the woods. I'm not looking at a map. I'm not looking at any kind of filtered interpretation of it. I'm out here and I'm seeing it. And this is just what it is.
I read a bunch of self-help books, but I also read a bunch of like psychology books. And for almost every type of personality, there's like a suggestion for you to like go and connect with nature in some way. Like, that's going to be good for you.
Yeah.
You know, for almost everyone. So.
We are the same person.
Yeah.
It's freaking.
Same.
What would you like the overarching ethos, like main takeaway message type point to be?
Probably some understanding of the fact that like, you know, singularity, we're all one, we're all connected, like the illusion of separateness and everything, like understanding how we're all the damn same. And that's been super helpful for me in my life right now is that anyone who's hurt me, the phrase, I think I heard this from Rob Bell's podcast is, hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I think that's an old AA thing.
I'm sure.
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And just having that basic understanding of like, we're all connected. And anytime that I want to say that person, that is separate from me, that shitty person, it's knowing that that person is being shitty out of their pain is really helpful.
Yeah. And because of their pain, they have a distorted view of what is right or what is like the right thing to do. Like, I've been reading a lot of Stoicism recently, like so Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius, and then there's also some Socrates thrown in there too. But like one thing Socrates would talk about is like everybody thinks they're doing the right thing. Like, and what if you approach everyone being like, no, I fully believe you think in your mind you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, some woo-woo new age way to say that would be to say that everyone's doing the best they can from their level of consciousness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the main takeaway. I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Are there any rules or like behavior codes or concept of sin, do's and don'ts? And we can take sin, by the way, as anything from
separation
like,
from God is like the thing that I would be okay with. Yeah.
Didn't even have to say it.
No, I wanted to cut you off before you said it too. I was like, I know this. No. I think that definitely like I remember being told that I was a sinner and like needing to figure out what I was sinning about and like really just like racking my brain about like, what have I done wrong? And that's exhausting. I think that, yeah, if anything, I don't know about rules. I think there's some organization, structure can breed spontaneity. So it's like, maybe if there is some encouraged, okay, sure. If we're making this up, then you don't know about the Enneagram, but I think the Enneagram is a really great thing that could be incorporated into this.
Can you give me like a quick?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the Enneagram is a way, it's talking about personality types and there are 9 types and it's based around your greatest need. Richard Rohr wrote a book from the Christian perspective, and it's in the Christian language, in Christianese, it would be called like the 9 faces of God. But it's really, I mean, most people every person that I've told to go look at it is like, oh crap. It's the truth thing where it's like, this is true. Yeah. Like, this is just true. Like, when you read about a type 7, a person pops into your mind that you're like, yep, I know who that is.
Interesting.
And usually the way that they say that you'll find your type is it's the one that embarrasses you the most, because you'll be like, why is that written down on paper? How does someone know that?
What's your type?
Yes, I do.
Is that like a really personal question?
Well, it is for my number specifically, but I'll explain it for the purposes of this podcast. So, I'm a type 2, which is the helper, which is the need to be needed. And, the reason why that's a vulnerable thing for me to share is that if someone understands that, then they know that my greatest like need is to be needed. And so it is easy for me to be used.
Mm.
Yeah. I think you might be a type 2, but I think
there's some of that
in
there.
2 is super Christian culture. There's a lot of Christian culture is very 2 and 1.
Yeah, and it gets into those codependency in a bad way.
and 2's 2 is usually a motherly figure, and a lot of women are encouraged to be 2 like, and 2's oftentimes create 2's. There's like a thing. My mom's definitely a 2. Anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah. So.
Is that like a good hostess type
thing? That's exactly it. That's actually like the nickname for that type. It's called the good host / hostess.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to fucking look that up.
You got that look. And it's spelled ENNEAGRAM. Enneagram.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like I have some of that type 2 from what you described, for sure.
Yeah. And you're probably going to want to read Richard Rohr's book. So.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
So the
reason why I like that to incorporate this into this religion is that what this structure helped teach me was that, different advice is good for different people, and that that's why I questioned you about like truth, is that it's like sometimes you'll hear advice that's like, oh, so true for you, but that's not a universal truth.
Oh, definitely.
Truth.
Definitely,
so,
yeah.
A good example, I usually use the example of the type 7, which is the enthusiast who usually has several interests, and their biggest need is the need to avoid pain. And, or generally the need to avoid. And, so it is great advice to tell them to focus, to not pursue a bazillion things, though they are wont to do that. There is a way for them to be. And that's the other cool thing about the Enneagram, is that it shows within every number what a healthy person looks like, what a moderate person looks like, what an unhealthy person looks like. And understanding that it's fluid, it's that wave where you have healthy and unhealthy moments.
Yeah.
You have redeemed and unredeemed moments.
Well, now I think I'm type 7 too.
Yeah.
Like, fuck.
We all have all of it in us for sure. And then it's also cool because it tells you which types would be great for you to emulate. And then when you're under stress, what types you are likely to go to, but that will be negative and will most likely have negative consequences. It's great.
Wow.
It's like spiritual and psychological. It's really cool. So I think that having that as a structure, it can show, because that advice is not good for me.
Right.
Telling me to focus
right.
is not like I do for me as a 2, the best thing for me to do is to go to my 4. The 4 is the individualist, the need to be special. And it's often like very creative, and it's really healthy for me to pursue creative things and to pursue several creative things. And because I used to do that to myself, I would see that I was like, shit, Dana, you are doing improv, you're doing music, you're doing visual art. And it's like, no, I can do all of those things. Those are all feeding each other and informing each other. And that's really good for me. To tell me to focus and just pick one, that's not great. That's good advice for other people, but it's not good for me.
Yeah. Well, it's like, yeah, no, I mean, I think of it a lot of times in terms of like so many stand-ups out here, different stand-ups at different point of your career. Not only do you need different advice at different point of your career. I mean, it's like everybody, like some people need to write more, but some people don't need to write more. Some people write plenty enough and they just need to perform more. Like that's how it's going to actually help them the most as a comic. And some people just need to be more social. They need to actually hang out with people and support shows and like actually be a good friend to people. But you know, usually the advice is kind of a catch-all, like, yeah, just keep getting up, keep doing it more. But some people, like, if you're doing, man, I mean, it's
the,
again,
the
it's,
Lord will never give you anything you can't handle.
Yeah.
There are times to hear that message and there are times that aren't, you know what I mean?
So that we're incorporating that into your religion then.
No.
Yeah. But the rules are to go to do what helps your type.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any holy texts? Would it be that book? Like any scriptures, and that we can extend this to blogs or.
I was going
to
say, let's have fun. Let's think of some kind of it would be really fun to do Van Morrison because he's so gospel, you know, like he's got that gospel style.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And like he can be really positive. So, but, let me think of somebody. I don't know. That would be really great.
The Van Morrison album.
Yeah. I was trying to also think of somebody who's not a white man. I was like, who's somebody that I could really get down with? I mean, there are people that are popping into my head, but I'm trying to think of.
No, who I've been on board with recently is Janis Joplin. I've been all over some Janis Joplin recently.
Yeah, she's good. She's great. And then, I mean, there could be like a recommended reading list, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like,
there are right and wrong answers to this, by the way.
I know. I just like I've tried. I know that the reason why I know about a bunch of white people is because I was raised by a bunch of white people who like a bunch of white stuff. And so, but there are times when it's like the gospel that comes out of black churches is so much better. And so it's like, I was trying to think of, I don't have a person that pops into my head as like something that would be, but that's just, you know,
okay.
Anyway,
cool. Is there a weekly, monthly, yearly gathering of this religion for any kind of worship, get together, hang out, picnic?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it could be fun to choose when a new year would be, you know?
When a new year would be?
Yeah.
Like pick an arbitrary date?
Yeah, Rosh Hashanah, whatever, you know, just like maybe it would be spring, like when it, like the first day of spring or something could be good, like on a solstice or something, or we could do it at night. That'd be really fun to do some like full moon something.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Full moon once a year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, pick the moon that has the coolest name. There's like the harvest moon and the wolf moon. Like whichever one has the coolest name, we should go with that one.
What's happening at these harvest moon get-togethers?
These harvest moon get-togethers.
Hoedowns.
Yeah, there's food and dancing and a fire, like a bonfire, and near a lake. and there's like harmonicas and let's see, there would be some kind of friendship bracelet. I mean, it's like weird because it's like there's something that's exclusionary about being in a club where it's like, you're not in the club, but then it feels so good to be in the club.
You're right.
You know?
Right.
So it's like, do you want a friendship bracelet that says you're in the club? Cause that feels good. Or is that bad? Cause that kicks people out. I don't know.
Mm.
Maybe for the purpose of this game, we have friendship bracelets.
We have friendship bracelets.
But anyone can get a friendship bracelet real easily if they just like want to come and hang out.
Cool. And where are these held? Like outdoor festivals? Like outdoor sheds?
Yeah.
Parks.
Like, I remember one of my pals, their family lived on like an old campground called Camp Powwow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, never mind the appropriation in that, but it was, but yeah, I mean, like, just like as many people who can be there, and yeah, sure, there'll be a songbook and we'll make up some dumb song about nature probably, or about seasons or something.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone will bring things that they want to get rid of. And there will be a time when you will be like burning things that like you regret, or that you don't want, or that you want to let go of, and like that it's like evil, nasty, you want to purge it. And then there can be a time of like, this was nice, and I want to honor the space and the time that this had in my life, but I would like to burn this because I would have thrown it away, but it didn't feel right to just throw it away. So I would like to have some ritual where I like burn it and I'm thankful for whatever that meant to me.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very creative.
Thank you very much.
Is there like a youth group aspect of this?
Kids are cool. I like hanging out with kids. I think that camp was really important to me as a kid, because it was a place where I had supervision, but it wasn't with my parents and it wasn't with anyone who was grading me. And like, they weren't my teacher. And so then I got to have these relationships with mentors, that I got to ask certain questions and get different perspective and advice. So, and be myself outside of the gaze of my parents or those authority figures.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that having a space for that, I don't even know. I think I would probably organize some kind of music and some kind of fun, and it would mostly be like activities based, like just doing fun, active shit, and then like allowing the opportunity to like have conversations. So it's like a culture of like understanding that you can ask for advice, or you can like have a conversation with an adult, but that there wouldn't be the assumption that adults have answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I, for sure.
It would be like informed guidance maybe, but like,
yeah, I mean, that's like, those were the, my favorite people in, when I was like my, what do you call them? The adults that were like working with my youth group in middle school and high school, the ones I always connected to were the ones that were just the most real about all their, like the least righteous in terms of like things they were like, oh, this is what you have to believe, this is how it is. And the most like, yep, this is how I'm fucked up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love it. Is there any kind of service, volunteer, mission work?
Yeah. I think that volunteering brings a special energy, like being involved in something and giving something. Instead of being paid for it, it's just a different experience. And it feels good. It feels good. Yeah. It feels good when you do that stuff. And I think that, not to sound so old timey about like kids with all their phones in their hands, but like, I think it's important for all of us to do hands-on, look people in the eyes, do something nice, think about someone's life outside of ourselves, and do something outside of ourselves. I think
it is
really difficult to do those things. It takes a lot of discipline.
Yep.
It takes a lot of intention to actually do that, to actually go to the food bank,
yeah,
to actually show up on that Saturday morning.
It's crazy how much effort it takes me to do that.
But then once you do it,
it always feels 100, amazing.
100, 100, 100, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It's like, it's like an even harder version of like exercise for a lot of people. The exercise I've sort of automated by now. I mean, maybe that's what you just have to do. You just have to like automate it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to do it. And that's like, sometimes I think of like, I read the book Power of Habit. I don't know if you ever read that book, but it sort of like breaks down what's going on in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
When habits are formed, and how addictions are really just habits that are out of control. And because it's when you get a certain cue, and then that thing, it triggers your whole routine of it to get some kind of reward of
that
it.
That resonates with me so much about weed. Yeah, totally.
it's a great book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of volunteering, I think that could, maybe that's what you have to do. You almost have to, like, because I do it with exercise. I'm like, I know, I'm just so habitual. Like, I know these days at this time of the day, every week, I know I'm going to be working out. So it doesn't take any effort for me to do it anymore. It's like, it doesn't, but it did originally. Mm-hmm. It did originally. But I'm saying that by now, the habit has taken over. So that's maybe the same thing that needs to happen for me in volunteering. I think of myself a lot because I'm like, I need to volunteer. I know I always feel so much better.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But in building this religion, like, that's the thing, right? Is that you have to volunteer. Like, you and the people who are going to be a part of this volunteer, whatever, like, they have to volunteer. They have to be the ones that raise their hand. And, like, that's the old church joke, right? Is that, like, Betty signed me up for Parsons Table again, you know?
Yeah.
Is that it's like, man, every time Darlene is calling me, telling me I gotta go volunteer for the car wash, you know?
Right.
And
yeah, well, it's related to one of the absurd things about a lot of Christian, I guess, denominations or beliefs, is that, like, the idea that you must love God. But then at some point, like, when is that really love if you have to do it? You know, as Ram Dass or somebody would say, no love is coercive. It's inherently not that. And so
right.
The second you try to be like, you must love me, like, then I'm not loving you, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's related to me with the whole, like, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, I think that it would be like, there would definitely be volunteer opportunities, but it would be, I think that because if we're talking about religion, we're actually talking about culture. So it's like, I would like for it to be culturally cool for people to volunteer.
Yeah.
Like, if that's a cool thing in this culture that people are like, oh, sick, you volunteered last week. Dope, you know? Like,
yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Is there any outreach or evangelism, marketing?
Oh, no. You know, just the old school evangelism thing where, like, they'll see God in your eyes, you know, and they'll just wonder what she's got, you know, and it'll sell itself. Where
they will know we are Christians by our love.
Love by our love.
So that's also in that book.
Yes, it is. But, yeah, I think that that's true, though, is that, like, you can soft pitch somebody on something, you know, but and just be like, I think you might be interested in this, but... I think that the most inviting thing is just, like, if you're just, that's the point, right? Is, like, live your life, do your thing.
Yeah.
Like, live your truth. So if you're living your truth and you're actually happy, then people are going to be like, what? And it's not going to be for everybody either. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, there is no culture that everyone likes.
Nope.
So
definitely not.
You know, so.
And is there a sense of afterlife that talked about? Is that broached? What do you think about the afterlife?
Yeah, I mean, I think that addressing death is important, you know, because it's something that everyone thinks about, and, like, what happens after. So I think that, it would not be taboo to talk about psychedelic drugs, that it would not be encouraged. It would not be a part of a ceremony, but that it would, like, it's like, it's okay if you want to talk about a psychedelic experience that you had. That's not something that's ashamed. And in fact, maybe we'll have a course about a safe way to take psychedelics, psych ed. but I think that's a That would be an anxiety reliever and therefore helpful, right? To have an outlet to talk about death and afterlife. So like maybe just like a circle, and you're just like, again, soft pitching like theories. And you could have like informed people. I was listening to, is it Shane Moss who does the Here We Are podcast? And he had on some neuro somebody who was talking about what it might look like after you die. Like, so like having informed people, maybe being like, well, we have this research and like talking about that, but having all kinds of different perspectives and theories. Cause I think that's something that a lot of people have stress about.
Yeah. No, totally.
So that sounds good.
I'm completely on board.
Yeah. Whatever it takes to have a good life, you know?
And finally, what do we call this thing?
Oh shit. I think we can call it okay, so what do you mean? Like, what do we call the religion, or what do we call the gathering, or what do we call the...
Any of it, whichever one you want to name. The religion, the name of the gathering.
I know, it's got to have a name. It's got to have a brand.
got to make that Facebook page somewhere.
I know. The thing is that I know that I've had like the word before, or like the name before. Do you have a name for yours?
Mine?
Yeah.
I've never made up one on this podcast.
What?
Yeah. Nobody's ever asked.
What?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, do we have time? What's yours?
You know what? We're going to save that for, that's episode 100 is, I make up my own.
But okay, cool.
For yours, you have a harvest. It's a harvest moon gathering.
Oh,
yearly
yeah.
thing.
Oh yeah. So, I don't know. Just for fun, maybe it'll be. I want it to be something witchy. I want it to be something magical and witchy. Maybe we'll just call it woo woo.
Woo woo.
Yeah, we'll just call it.
Hell yes.
Yeah, you going to woo woo tonight? Yeah, let's get some woo woo.
Oh my!
It's gonna be pretty woo woo.
There should be a comedy show named Woo Woo.
All right, we come.
Let's make it happen. Well, Dana, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Where would you like people to find you?
I do a podcast called Who We Used to Be with Veronica Gruba, and you can find me on Instagram at Dana B, DAYNAB, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and I think my episode of your podcast will probably be out by the time you listen to this. Somebody is listening to this.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This was fucking great.
Oh, thank you for letting me choose my own religion.
I don't, man. Now I feel like I should have that. Like, that's like, that should be my keep it crispy. Just make people say the title of it the most obnoxious way possible. Choose my own religion.
Here I go. Choose my own religion.
There you go. And that's the show. Once again, thank you so much to Dana. Check out the Who We Used to Be podcast, either my episode or any of the episodes. It's a great podcast. And go to chooseyourownreligion.com for any old stuff. And if you're in Baltimore again, I would love to see you on May 11th. I love you. Jamaste.
What's a creative podcast network?